Now, that you take the case of Castro. But when Castro went in, everybody was applauding Castro. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Because he seemed to be better than
Batista. Herbert Nazi.
Well, but there's an example. That there are many things that can conceivably be worse than what you've got. And I'm not advocating the status quo. I'm merely saying that don't always assume that because something is bad, that what you're going to get has to be better than that.
Gene, I didn't realize, and coming back to the Ferrari in the bedroom, I didn't realize that you had so much talent in drawing. Has this always been so? I want to show some of those pictures.
Well, I'm glad you like them. It's funny. At one point in my life, Casper, I seriously considered being an artist. In fact, my father was a cartoonist when I was a child, a very small child, and he worked for Midwestern papers. He didn't do comic cartoons. He did political things, working for a larger cartoonist. And from the time I was about two or three, I was taught to draw with pen and ink by my father, the way most kids are taught to read. And by the time I was 10 or 15, I could draw as quickly and as rapidly and as accurately as probably anybody in the country with pen and ink. And I never thought that it was unusual. It was only in recent years when I've been doing it. I do a great deal, but I've illustrated for the Village Voice. I did some stuff for Doubleday. And it never occurred to me that a lot of people simply can't draw for a long time in my life.
Well, let's take a look at some of these. And this first, would you describe this to our audience?
Well, that drawing was a... I tried to capture the curious... Rococo sort of neo-nostalgic quality of a village coffee shop. That was done at the bar of the Limelight down on 7th Avenue.
You did a program from there once, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But this the particular drawing is of their that kind of curious 19th century nostalgia you find in many village coffee shops. I tried to capture it. Notice the line. I just like to make one point on that. But I used a special line for that. But that you'll notice it has two or three thicknesses of line, which gives it a kind of a curious period quality. I tried to get the period feel that they try to reproduce in many village coffee shops. It's ersatz, but that's what they try to do.
Well, now the next one that I wanted to show is this one, which is sort of apropos of the set we're on right now.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of, if you'll raise that a bit, there's a lot of stark sculptural shapes in television. And to me, the whole idea of these, the great bank of lights, which I drew one day in a studio over at CBS. And it's a kind of a modern communication machine, this great bank of lights with all the adjustments and all the various wires and cables. It's a very dramatic... It's more dramatic, really, to me, than most modern sculpture. And that's why I did this in strict line and pen and ink. You notice one of the most difficult things of doing a line drawing of this type, Casper, by the way, is to try to keep the drawing clean. Use no shading, you know. You notice there's no shading there. And yet, you get a sense of depth in each one of those dishes. And that's a French style of drawing.
Do you find yourself doing this all the time, or are these just the exception that you did?
I draw constantly. Most of these drawings were done on napkins, by the way, in restaurants at night. That's one of my favorite drawings. That is a brownstone, a classical New York brownstone, which is just opposite, I believe it's on 53rd Street, just opposite the Museum of Modern Art. In fact, I was sitting in the museum, the garden of the Museum of Modern Art, looking up at the top of that brownstone when I drew this. That was done with a German pen, a Kohinoor pen, using India ink and a special textured drawing paper. That the original of that drawing, by the way, is about 4 feet by 2 feet, roughly. It's a huge drawing.
Here's my favorite.
Now that is a kind of a tour de force, really, because one of the things that I do in my drawing is I'm fascinated with the shape and the feel of our cities. And most artists, incidentally, are trained with the live figure, generally, and they have trouble with cityscapes. This is a cityscape, and as you can see, it's the fountain, it's the plaza, over here is the old hotel, and it's looking south from Central Park South. I was sitting on a park bench. That drawing took me about, oh, I'd say a good month to draw, working at it maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. And it's all done live. It's not done from any photographs or anything like that.
Have you made any of these pen and ink sketches into paintings?
Yes, I do have several paintings, although that's a different technique. I will often use the pen and ink technique within a painting, but you can't really convert them. They're two different mediums. It's like converting a poem into a novel. Different thing.
Gene Shepard, what of your TV career lately?
Right now, there's a lot of things going on with it. I've had a couple of offers from two networks to do a version of Gene Shepard's America, which was on PBS. And incidentally, which a lot of the philosophy and the ideas from that show are in Ferrari in the bedroom, as you can tell, reading the book. And right now, we've got a big plan up for public broadcasting, and we're debating whether or not to carry through with it, because they're having problems with funding over there. You know, there's all kinds of political things going on. It's pretty tough.
Well, they didn't get the maximum amount they asked the Congress for, as I recall.
Well, I don't know much about that. You know, the fiscal things over there. I know that they were asking for an. They did get their regular grant, but they were asking for an increase. And that Congress says, well, we'd like to find out where you've been spending the money first before we do that.
What difference would it mean to you in the program that you produce, whether it be on PBS or on a commercial network?
Make a big difference. I think one of the advantages of commercial broadcasting is that if your show is successful with the public, you're pretty assured that the show will continue. This doesn't hold true on PBS. But PBS has what they call the project attitude. In other words, if they do a show and the project is successful, they may just drop it and go on to another project, because each project is funded separately. It's not like a continuing show on a network.
Well, Gene, I never felt, and I've listened to you for years, that your appeal is as, let's say, across the spectrum as, for instance, Bob Hope. I would think you're a more specialized appeal, which would not result in the overriding numbers.
Well, that's a hard question to resolve. I think things are changing. As a matter of fact, today, it depends on who you're talking about. My appeal is very great among college students. I have one of the largest followings in that age group of anybody in probably in the humor field as a comic. I play colleges all over the country. In fact, I've just finished playing the University of Oklahoma. I played Notre Dame.
When you play, what do you mean? You give
up on stage?
A concert?
Yeah,
all
right.
A vocal, a talk concert, in other words.
Well, I suppose Lenny Bruce was a talk concert artist. I mean, what is a comic?
Well, I'm just trying to...
Yeah, I get up, I'm on stage, and I play...
You give your monologue.
Well, I'm more of an actor. I don't just stand up and talk to the audience. I play roles and stuff. See, stuff I can't do on radio, really, because radio isn't that visual, but... I played Carnegie Hall here a couple of months ago. We had a sellout, a very special kind of show. And I play roles of all the characters, in other words, in Ferrari, for example. I play those characters instead of describing them as you have to do in a book or on radio. I actually play them. When I'm talking about a slob, for example, I am a slob on stage. I don't talk about it. I just be one. Which is much more dramatic. You know, sitting there with his can of Rheingold, listening to Lindsay Nelson. Say, hey, crazy fool, come on, move it over there.
How many commercials did you do for Rheingold, incidentally?
Oh, I did all of the ones on the Mets last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do commercials.
Did you write any of them?
Yeah, I did. I worked with the writer and the director on all of them, in fact. Most of the commercials that I work on, I write, or at least have a great hand in. I'm doing Alka-Seltzers now.
Oh, well, I heard many of them being a Mets fan. I was trying to think, Was it that I recognized you, or did it identify you on the Rheingold commercial?
I don't know. I'm in no position to say that.
I mean, you did
no, oh, I never said my name.
No, then I recognized your voice.
No, I never. I never put my
no
name.
One told me it was Gene Shepard. I knew
no,
it was. But
I
what I meant was, you know, do they say, and now Gene Shepard for Rheingold?
You know, that's in a way, that's a compliment, I guess, because I do have a distinct style, I'm sure, and my voice and my general style, I guess, is identifiable. I've had letters, a funny letter I got one time from Cesar Romero, the actor.
Yeah.
And he wrote me a letter just out of the blue, from Hollywood. And he says, every time I hear you, he says, you have such a distinct style. He said, an absolutely inimitable style. And he said, it makes him laugh the minute he hears it. He says, I can't understand why. And so I suppose style is a matter of attitude and viewpoint.
Well, I think it was very clever of them not to identify you, because, for instance, you hear these commercials for some kind of film, and they say, this is Henry Fonda from the film, whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't know why Henry Fonda has to explain to people who he is.
No, because his voice is identifiable.
Yeah, it just surprises me when you hear somebody with a voice like Roderick Crawford, who's you know him the instant you hear him.
He was my sergeant at one point during World War II.
He was your sergeant.
Yeah. Before he became a policeman.
Yeah, but he was... is he as tough as he seems?
Oh, no.
I don't think so. He's a fine man. Good actor, by the way.
What's ever happened to Brad Crawford? I never hear of him anymore.
Oh, he's doing all kinds of television series and things. For a while, he was one of the thousands of TV doctors.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. There's a whole phalanx. In fact, you know what I expect to do one day? I'm writing a short story about the General Hospital of TV, where all the retired doctors of TV go to practice. Vince Edwards, the whole crowd, Richard Chamberlain, they're all there.
Well, maybe they would have finished medical school by that point.
Oh, they don't need to go to... You know, that's what I mean. You know, that's what's so funny about our time. Do you know that Robert Young, who plays Marcus Welby, recently gave the graduating address to a group of doctors graduating from a medical school? You know, difficult cases he's had.
Well, let's not recommend that medical school.
But that's what's happening. In other words, it's a common thing to read in the paper that Ephraim Zimbalist, who is that famous crime fighter, has been invited to speak to the graduating class of a police group. He in fact, spoke to the FBI graduating class, which I think is fantastic. It's like getting Laurence Olivier, because he's such an experienced king, calling me, you know, to give the UN advice on the kingdom.
Or Jerry Page or Julie Harris to talk on Lincoln history.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, no, not really. Really not to talk on Lincoln history. That they may be able to do, because they can study that.
Yeah.
But it would be like Julie Harris gives a talk to the incoming 1974 First Lady on how to be a really elegant first lady. You know, she's played them, so. And I think this is part of the whole creeping rerunism is becoming part of our problem in America. Do you realize today, Casper, right at this minute, there are probably some people still sitting blank-eyed in front of their TV set somewhere way out in the boondocks watching the 337th rerun of an I Love Lucy sequence that was filmed back in the early 1900s. And they're still sitting out there watching it. By God, it's scary.
One comment on that. Why should it scare you if somebody out there has never seen it?
Oh, no, that's not the point. They have seen it.
Oh, I thought you meant they was finally getting around.
Oh, hell no. I'm talking about them sitting there.
Or having seen it themselves many times.
They'll sit mindlessly and watch the same thing over and over again. In fact, at Channel 9, you know, they do a lot of TV stuff. They do a lot of reruns. And particularly do their old movies. Thousands of old movies. One of the guys over there told me, he says, you know, that they can play this movie, same movie, like 8 times in a month, and the same people watch it.
Well, Gene, can you remember, if you see a movie that you saw 20 years ago, can you remember what happened?
No. I'm not a movie fan. I like pool games.
Poor game?
Pool.
Pool. Yeah. Shooting pool.
Yeah. Well, I like to watch them. I don't play.
You mean a la Gleason, that sort of pool?
Yeah, hopscotch. Yeah. I like to watch people play hopscotch.
Gene, one last question. You're talking about all this thing. What happened to your acting career?
Well,
I remember reviewing you a couple of times.
Yeah, and I did quite well.
Yeah, not bad.
Thank you. Well, acting changed in New York. No, it did. No.
You mean they would hire you or what?
No, not at all. No, if you're asking a serious question,
I am. Yes.
That my agent, Peter Witt.
I know Peter well.
Sure, he's my agent. A lot of people don't realize that the Broadway theater has become almost the import theater. Practically every major play, is an English play that's come in, or it's a musical, and very few actors. Remember, I'm talking about men. Very few actors can work consistently on Broadway these days. Jason Robards went 2 years without getting a role on Broadway. So it became a very different theater than it was when I was working in it, which was back in the early 60s when there was a lot of roles for actors. George Siegel is a friend of mine, and George went for almost 8 years in this town without getting a role on Broadway.
But you're open to offers.
Oh, I love acting, and it was what it's originally what I am. I came to New York as an actor, you know, Catherine. I did a lot of. In fact, I came to New York. I did New Faces, you recall. I did all kinds of Broadway and off Broadway stuff. But then I began to be so much interested in television that it kind of took over.
Gene, we're out of time. We've been talking about Gene Shepherd's The Ferrari in the Bedroom, published by Dodd Mead. Good luck on the book.
It's a fantastic book.
Yeah.
Next week at this time, WNYC TV 31 will again present Casper Citron Interviews. Address your cards or letters to WNYC TV 31, New York 1-0007.